This is design is in the details. Saturday, March 8th, 10 in the, well, a little bit past after 10 in the morning. So good morning, and I know it's a little early. I'm sure some of you stayed up late last night. I did not. I'm Naz Hamid. A little bit about me before I explain the presentation. I am an independent designer based in Chicago, Illinois. I work with design studios across the country, working on various different interactive and other types of projects. But, you know, most of the time it's interactive stuff. I'm also the co-founder and creative director for Gapers Block. It's gapersblock.com. It's a city, Chicago-centric webzine, news and events site. Well, that's the official pitch for it anyway. And Chicago is the city of broad shoulders and humble dreams. So, pertinent URLs, if you're curious, are weightshift.com, which is where my work and portfolio is, and nzrn.com, which is a recently launched personal site of mine where I kind of talk about whatever I want to talk about. So my own details are kind of encapsulated in this. This is what I carry with me. Just a few things. Some of them are on stage here, some are not. But kind of fun stuff. And so anyway, about this presentation. Designers in the Details is kind of a slightly, it's like a reminder of what we do as interactive designers. So it's geared towards beginners or up and coming designers and junior designers, but also if you're, you know, up there and sometimes you need reminders about what, you know, you need to do as an interactive designer to get the design done or sold or executed and, you know, sell it to the client well. So this is kind of what it's about. So it's not about tips and techniques. I'm not going to go into any of that kind of stuff because you've read, you know, the gazillion sites about Ajax or, you know, CSS, and you read A List Apart or you read, you know, the numerous sites that deal with, how to do this or that. So I'm dealing more with critical thinking, methods, concepts, and ideas about what it is to do detailed design. So you already have the toolkit, so I'm not going to kind of insult you by saying that you don't. But essentially, I want to stress again that tips and techniques fortify a designer's toolkit, but critical thinking is as important. To me, it's, you know, half of the stuff is execution, but the other half is, you know, the concept, the idea, kind of like listening to the client and figuring out what you need to do to get a design sold or a client approved and on board of a design. So what does it mean when we talk about design in the details? The famous Chicago architect Ludwig Mies van der Rohe, one of the fathers of modernism and minimalism, was very fond of this phrase, which is God is in the details. And he also said something else, which I'll get to in a bit. But what we say is design is in the details. It's a common phrase. We say it all the time. You know, you've heard it from your creative director. You hear it on TV and, you know, movies, whatever. You know, God is in the details. Design is in the details. All that good stuff. And these following phrases are kind of things that you hear in and out daily in different kinds of things. So the small parts make up the whole. Little things make a big difference, which is Oprah Winfrey's like infamously famous thing that she likes to say. If you watch Oprah at all, but you are the sum of all parts, you know. So you know, it's when you think of being a designer, you think about you're being the creator. You're kind of playing God in a way. So you know, with that in mind, it's the details are up to you. What you do, you know, kind of spits back out and, you know, is what the audience or the client or your creative director or your internal team kind of looks at and, you know, decides how good your stuff is. So, and so is design. And the other thing that Mies said was less is more. So when we think about detail design, we think about, you know, when you look at a photograph or you look at something that's highly detailed, you're like, oh, look at the little details in this, you know, look at how much detail's in there. But we have to think about, you know, editing and being critical about not putting too much stuff in or having, you know, just the right amount or whatever is necessary. So keep in mind that, you know, while God is in the details, less is also more, which is, you know, Mies' other favorite thing. So in essence, It means that we care, we listen, we solve problems, and we take pride in our work. I mean, when you're putting stuff out there, you kind of want to be, you kind of want to sit back and think that, hey, I'm, you know, I like that. It'll look good in my portfolio. I'm proud of it. I listen to the client. I listen to my team. We solved issues. We created solutions. And, you know, I mean, like, you know, you, as a designer, you always want to put your stamp on something, but at the same time, you kind of want to listen. You know, I mean, that's what we're doing. We're solving problems and we're creating solutions. So, what does it look like? What does detailed design look like? It's not that, which is Details magazine. It's a men's lifestyle magazine that I kind of found, but I thought it was funny. Justin Timberlake's there, and apparently he wants to be alone. But on the left shoulder there, it says America's most disturbing new sexual fetish. So I'm sure to some of you, you know, Justin Timberlake is probably like God's greatest gift to mankind or something. So it's not this either. And this is Microsoft Word of all the toolbars, if you've ever done that. this is from Jeff Atwood's Coding Horror website, and it's been passed out on the web, but it's another example of when too much detail is just overwhelming and kind of silly. So getting into seriousness of what does it really look like? This is a piece by an industrial designer friend of mine back in Chicago, and it's called Pinch. And it is a salt and pepper shaker, essentially. Craig works for a company called Gravity Tank, which is an industrial design firm, but he's also branching out on his own, and this was his first kind of piece. And this was part of a design within Leech's Furniture Now exhibition that was traveling the country last year. Well, actually, 2 winters ago, sorry. And the way it works is it looks pretty, it looks cool, but it's actually really functional. So on the left there, you see a sphere that has the pepper on top of, on below it, which is actually the pepper shaker. So if you're a cook or a chef, or you cook at home and you're kind of familiar with techniques in cooking, you know that, you know, you want to add a dash of pepper and never too much because you can't take back. But with the salt, you're taking pinches or you're pulling it out of the vessel and you're kind of spreading it around liberally. So if you ever watch Emeril, you know, he's always like, bam, salt. But you know, that's kind of what he does. And it contains itself nicely by putting the sphere into the vessel. So, you know, the salt doesn't get exposed to the air or whatever else that spoils salt, if it gets spoiled at all. So, this is a nice piece of detailed design, but it's also extremely functional and kind of listens to how a cook and a chef actually works in the real kitchen instead of just, you know, salt and pepper shakers. The next slide is one course out of a 24 course at the restaurant called Alinea in Chicago, which is kind of being called the number one restaurant in the country at the moment. Grant Achatz is the chef and owner there. And if there was a detailed designer version of in the cooking world, then Grant Achatz is probably it. The way this dish works is there is, in the middle is beans. It's white pureed beans. And around it are the accoutrements. There are 9 different, kind of different takes on things. There's like a green bean casserole, the green thing over there with the kind of onions on it. And there's a Sichuan garlic pepper thing. And how it works is you kind of take something from the middle and combine it with something around the side and kind of put it together. And you have different flavors and you've kind of got 9 or more dishes in one. And that's course 3 out of 24 courses. It's a 5.5-hour meal. This is course 5. It's Salsify. It's pretty looking. It's great. It's got lox in it. It's got dill and mint. And it's actually meant to remind you of a lox bagel with smoked salmon and cream cheese. It's a nice dish. And this last one is, number 17 that I'm showing you is my favorite out of the bunch. And it is the lamb dish. It's lamb's prepared 2 ways. In the bottom left corner is a pan-fried braised lamb. In the upper left is the lamb shank. But the thing that looks like a map or like a playground school map is a 9 sauces that have been flattened out. And same thing, he wants you to play with the food. interact with the food, kind of give you a different vision and take on his on the way you should play with your food and interact with it. But the sauces here are like pomegranate, strawberry cheese, two kinds of mustard, a mint sauce. And, you know, Akats is, if you were ever in Chicago and want to check it out, it's definitely worth going to. This was my Halloween costume a couple of years ago. And it was at my friend Andrew and Cinnamon's Halloween. They have a themed Halloween party of the year. And this one was called Doomed Couples. So I decided to go as Lance Armstrong, and my wife went as Sheryl Crow. And this was just before they broke up. And it was just my cycling gear. It wasn't anything different than what I usually wear. But so what I ended up doing is putting the detail in the jersey number. So it's, you know, it says Live Long and I Do It and the Coverly Channel and 001 Testicle and I Am the Uniballer. And he's, I mean, if you're familiar with Lance, you know, he's only got one, which makes him faster. So, but he's, you know, he's all man. So, so that was, you know, something fun. This was a proposed Kikkoman ad that my good friend David Munson, who's a photographer here in Denton, Texas, did a while ago, which didn't get picked, but I still love this piece. He basically, it kind of epitomizes soy sauce to me. It's got some, you know, dried rice grains around it, and it's got the Kikkoman kind of picking up from it, and it's a nice piece of detailed design that kind of gets at what, you know, what soy sauce gets used for mostly. So this is in the Hotel Max in Seattle, which my wife and I went to this past October. And undoubtedly, you're all staying in hotels, or, you know, most of you are, and, you know, they're all kind of generic looking, and you're looking for your number, and you've got to go down this hallway, and like, oh, I don't remember which number I'm at, or whatever. The Hotel Max is a little different that way. We stay there because it's got this kind of modernistic, mid-century modern feel to it, and being a designer, I was like, oh, I got to stay there. Got to check that place out. But the way it works is it has these hallways, and each door has a different local artist's piece of work on it. So it's got either a photograph or some kind of collage or some kind of artwork that they did. So once you recognize your door, or once you find your door, you kind of always remember which door you are at or which room you're in, because you've got this piece of art on the door. You're like, oh yeah, I'm staying at this room, which has, you know, picture of a repeating lady on billboards down this thing. I didn't quite like the door, but it was fun enough. So this is in Key West, Florida. It's Universal Cleaners. I'm very fond of that. Whenever I see it, it's just a nice way to show, hey, gentle cleaning. It's a mama cat licking a baby kitten. I thought it was cute. So this is the Lafa Soft Shell. This is like one of my favorite pieces of, I don't own it, but I want to. I lust and inspire to own this piece of clothing one day. It's a cycling jacket. And if you're used to cycling jackets, you know, most of them are kind of bright orange or yellow or something kind of ugly like that. Lafa is a company based in the UK, and they make this jacket, and it's pretty simple up front, nice and sleek. Two things I want to talk about with this jacket are the zipper is kind of offset to this way. And the whole reason for that is when you're kind of cycling and you pull up your collar to the top, and when you're cycling, you're kind of chafing your chin with the zipper up there. And if you've got a kind of heavier winter jacket or a North Face jacket, you might notice they put this kind of soft thing so that it doesn't chafe your chin. But they put it off to the side so they don't get that. And the other thing they did was they ended up putting in the photo on the left is a bite grip. So you kind of pull your jacket like that, and when it's off to the side, and you can kind of pull it down with one hand without having to kind of hold your jacket and pull it down or whatever. So the other nice feature about this, it's got an ass flap, which kind of folds up into the jacket and protects your ass from getting wet. And is also, the logo is reflective, so cars can see you, which is great. And the last thing I wanted to show you was this Nike Triax Vapor 300 watch, which is it's for the serious athlete. It's got 300 lap memory. So, you know, when you're going for lap 299, you still got one to go or whatever. And, but it's ergonomic. It's kind of, it's got a curved screen and it's got large numbers. So it's kind of meant for you to, when you're running, you're kind of glancing up at your watch like this and not having to like kind of bring it up to your face and look at it. So, but this is kind of what it looks like. For us interactive designers, you know, the reality is we sit around at a internal presentation for the first time or a client meeting and, you know, we've got the comps up on screen and you're kind of critiquing them. So what happens is, you know, you'll kind of look at them and there's going to be somebody who kind of didn't put in a footer or they didn't put in the login box or they didn't put the right search in there or, you know, they think it's 80 to 100% done and you're thinking, that's kind of 75% done or, you know, it's not quite there. And, you know, then the creative director or your art director starts nitpicking it. It's just like, you know, what's that about? And then, you know, they get focused and kind of hung up on these small details that you should have taken care of. So that's kind of what I want to stress. These kinds of, you know, having a very complete, detailed, functional feel to your interactive design. So I kind of want to go into the meat of this, I guess, or the second half. And it's a checklist and guide for things that you can do to, you know, make your design shine, to make it get past all the little hang-ups that creative directors and art directors and clients tend to pick up on. So, you know, when you're talking about it, you're not talking about silly stuff like this login box doesn't look right or, you know, the footer, where's the footer? It's like, oh, I didn't have time, you know, I was working or whatever, or not working. So the eight things are: one, experiment; two, choices; three, stay consistent; four, completeness; five, step in, step out, step back, balance; six, be your own critic; seven, complexity and simplicity, less is more; and eight, obsession is healthy. So we'll go into number one. Experiment. Now, when I'm, and you know, all these are kind of, this is my flow of design. That's how I kind of, these are the steps that I take when I do design. So this is my method. And you know, it's might not be your method. You might do things differently, but, you know, I like learning from other things. So, you know, hopefully this kind of checklist kind of will help you either look at the way you work or, kind of think about how you approach things. So experimenting. I don't do pen and paper sketches. I know some people are fond of that or whatnot. I just kind of go into Photoshop straight up. I open up maybe three or four PSD files. And what I start doing is kind of just playing around with things. You know, you have all the source material from the client or you have, you know, a logo or something if they haven't supplied you the materials and you start playing around with colors and feels, you know, kind of thinking about what the client's needs are and what their tone is and so on and so forth. And I'll just kind of play around with stuff. So I'll put a logo in one comp and then I'll put a navigation in another one. And if I wanted to use a big background image in another, I'll put it in another one and kind of not commit to one design yet because I kind of want to see where things kind of lead if I take a few different directions. And what I'll do is I'll start mashing them up. So I'll start taking a navigation from here and putting it in here and seeing what happens. And it's what I call the beautiful mistake. Because what you intend doing in something else ends up being placed in something else and suddenly it works for whatever reason. So I stress this idea of exploration and kind of trying to figure out what might work that you might not see. Because when you're a designer and you do stuff day in and day out, you kind of have this constant desire to kind of fall back on stuff you've done or kind of try to make it, you know, you have this idea and you're like, okay, I have to execute it this way. And if it's not working, you know, open up something else and try to play with it. So, that's kind of that. But I wanted to show you something, an example of that. I work with a studio back in Chicago called M. Stoner quite often. And for the last year and a half, I spent 50% of my time working on, university and college websites. And I got into the work because I wanted to do something that was a little bit more non-commercial. Well, non-commercial in the sense that it's not, you know, kind of Web 2.0 stuff or whatever, you know, that kind of thing is. But I wanted to do stuff that actually kind of made a difference to some degree. So one of the sites I worked on with them, one of the first ones was Princeton University's undergraduate admission site. And I started, I had a few comps open, and I did this one. And this one is pretty straightforward. It's kind of looks like a blog, you know. It isn't super compelling. And I mean, the goal of the site is to get undergraduate students or potential undergraduate students to come to the school and want to be at Princeton University and get kind of the feel of the experience of what, you know, being at Princeton is like. So I did this. And then I just kind of took colors out and did this version, which is okay. And then I did this other version, which I swore that they wouldn't go for, or that, you know, we thought would be a big list because it's kind of different. And I ended up with this. And this is a bit different than what they were expecting, but they loved it. They loved it. The studio loved it. It, due to outside circumstances, we didn't go with this, but it was very well received. And this was, you know, kind of taking advantage of what they had on hand. And what Princeton University has is absolutely stunning photography. Like, they had really nice stuff to work with. So I wanted to take advantage of that. And they wanted to kind of draw in students by showing what really might be like at Princeton University. So, you know, they have this nice image, this kind of iconic image of these dancers kind of dancing in their hall. And so we used that and kind of bumped up the main kind of pulls. So you have this, you know, Princeton the very best, all about applying, cost and financial aid, visit Princeton, the kind of the things that undergraduate students would want to check out and see when they go to Princeton. So, and then we did another, the whole point of this design was to kind of downplay the branding a little bit and focus on the image of the, and this was another version, another nice photo. And the whole goal was to have, you know, every time you came to the site, you'd have a different image show up in the background. So, and that's experiment. Number two, choices. We have to make a lot of choices as interactive designers, you know, from again, based on client needs and your style and what you think is right for the client. You know, you're kind of picking typefaces, you're picking colors, you're picking overall tone of the site. And, you know, for me, it's like, you know, try to pick the things that are simple. And when I mean simple, I mean things that make the most sense. So if something is kind of hard to do or complex and it starts feeling complex, then it's probably not a good idea to do it unless you can really defend your design or kind of explain it out to the client. And, you know, when I mean simple, it doesn't necessarily mean like, oh, it's, you know, it has to be dumb or something. It's just, it works. It's functional. Moving on from choices to that degree, once you start making these choices, you got to stay consistent. If you start using the logo moved exactly at this point, or, you know, because once you start working on internal pages, you either are working off a home page typically, and then you start going into the interior pages or the sub home pages and so on and so forth. And you want to start making sure that they reflect each other, because again, they're going to get caught up on little details like, okay, the sidebar is like 5 pixels off in this one. What's up with that? You know, and they're like focusing on silly little things like that. Because clients aren't always sophisticated. So you have to kind of show them the sophistication by being transparent. I mean, they don't need to know what's going on in as far as like little minute details like that. So, you know, pull them off in the beginning so that they don't hang up and focus on it later. Once you're starting to be consistent, you want to be complete. Completeness is to me is a big deal. I often work late hours if I have to, even if I'm kind of going past budgeted time or whatever, just so that I can get the design kind of done. Because I don't want clients to be hung up, but I don't want my, you know, the art director or the creative director I'm working with to be hung up on these minute little details that I should have taken care of the first time, you know, because it kind of looks unprofessional. So, you know, take pride in your work and kind of get it done. And to that end, I'll show you an example. This was something we worked on for Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. And it was it's a business research magazine that they do. And this was version one that I did. And it is, it's all about business. It pulls from the faculty and staff. And it's, you know, this was version one, and I put in everything. Everything had to be in there because we had to sell the client on it. And there were four designs going up against it, and this was my design. And they liked it, so I started rolling with it. We decided on this one, and we went forward. So six designs later, so this is version one. This is the last version, and this is the version that's currently live. It is, it's more or less the same, aside from aesthetic choices and some color to reflect more of Kellogg's and Northwestern's branding. We've kept kind of the general structure the same. So things got moved around a little bit, like the mailing list got moved up into the masthead, and we had a Spring 2007 put in there instead. And we kind of, instead of a guest blog, we had, you know, most popular, the typical little tabbing thing that you see on sites. And, you know, it's a very editorial feel because it's a magazine. So, I mean, this is what I mean when I mean completeness. It doesn't look, all the details are there up front from version one. And the last version you do should still have the same details unless major editorial or content changes have been made. So that's number four. Number five, step in, step out, step back, balance. And for me, it's like, you know, I like to take breaks from stuff a lot, just to be objective about design, because it's hard to be objective about your design. Your eyes are bleeding from looking at it over and over. You're kind of looking at a design, you know, I've been working on this for like 10 hours. I need a break. Take that break, you know, go out for lunch, you know, walk your dog, or take 15 minutes, look at something else, go surf the web, get out the office, take a bike ride. I actually sometimes take, you know, 2 days off from a design. I try to come back to it and forget it. I do the design, forget about it for 2 days or a day, come back to it and try to see it with fresh eyes. And, you know, you want to start, when you go look at it again for the first time, you want to take notes on what, you know, what kind of stood out from you when you looked at it again the first time. Did that, you know, navigation look odd to you when you left it, or were you kind of pleased with it? And when you come back to it, are you still happy with it, or are you unhappy with it? Because, you know, these are kind of the first impressions that the art director or your team or your creative director or the client will see. And they'll, you know, kind of figure out, okay, well, I don't like this. And if you have kind of, you know, if you trust your gut instinct and to maybe knowing that they're not going to like it either, then, you know, do something about it. And this is a example. This is a site that I'm working on. It's actually almost finished for a Santa Cruz bicycle frame builder called Francis. It's a Joshua Moore site, and this was kind of the first complete version I did. And he has some super nice photography as well. I'm very fond of working with photography. That's good. And we kind of put a bunch of stuff on the homepage. So it's not complete. It never really got complete. I kind of had this kind of weird blog up front and a bit about Francis cycles and so on. And I was like, it just doesn't look like, you can't see the bike, whatever, and so on. It's like, there's too much information here. So we kind of changed it up and I tried to bring more balance to it. And this is the site that's going to go up. And this is kind of, you know, okay, so now I can see the bike. The bike looks good. Kind of changed it up a little bit. Put the galleries at the front, just had a little teaser for the kind of the blog that he's going to have, and kind of try to focus on the strengths of what sells here for the bike frame builder. Because, you know, cycling is a very visual kind of thing when you're kind of curious about frame builders. So again, balancing client needs and trying to figure out what details need to be in there and what isn't. And to that end, number six is be your own critic. If you're if you're familiar with the client, if you're familiar with the team that you work with regularly, in the department, or if, you know, whether you work with a studio freelance and you've kind of got a rapport with the creative director, the art director, or the other designers there, then you're kind of in the know. And I mean, everyone's kind of, you know, that, okay, that creative director, I'm going to have battles with him. You know, I know I'm going to fight him on some things, but you know, I mean, this is where you have to kind of look at your design and think about the questions that'll come up. You know, if you know things are going to kind of, you know, provoke them, or, you know, they'll get hung up on something, then, you know, you kind of want to address that before you go into it so they don't. And, you know, I mean, that's kind of a compromise. So, I mean, you've kind of got to have sound, you know, sound explanations for your decisions. So that's number six. And this is something I did for Yale. It's their law school library. And we did this design. I did this design. And when we sat down for the internal presentation, we were looking at it and we're like, well, we got a nice big photo there. And we have a photo for the library blog. But that kind of masthead kind of gets masked by the navigation. And we've got this opacity board kind of toolbar at the top of the search in it. And, you know, we immediately self-edited like one round later and ended up with this. Took it out, kind of put the law school has this blue color and that's kind of what we went with. Kind of simplified things a little bit, but essentially it's the same design. So we took that, we just took one thing out and, simplified the search area. And that's the design that's live now. So, kind of just, you know, it might be small things. Again, details. So. Number seven is complexity and simplicity, less is more. I'm very fond of this idea of complexity and simplicity, that the complex can be simple if you design it right, or if you put the right details in to make it so. And it's, you know, you're kind of thinking about what needs to be edited, or, you know, when we talk about less is more, we think about, you know, stripping things down. But in reality, we're kind of thinking about leaving everything in that needs to be there only, and not having the extraneous stuff or the cool stuff or the stuff that you think is neat, or, you know. And if we can do something that doesn't need Ajax, do we need to do it? Do we need to have some DHTML thing that makes it fancy if we don't have to? I mean, again, you have to kind of balance the audience and the client and who and what their needs are in terms of, you know, what needs to get done. And again, delivering the final product. You got to remember that it's not you you're trying to make happy per se. So, and this is something, well, this is a site for Humanized. If you're familiar with them, they're, you know, now kind of part of Mozilla. But Humanized, this was kind of one of the first concepts I did for their site. And it's kind of murky. I designed a visual identity for them, and then we kind of started doing homepages. And this was, I think, homepage one out of three. And it didn't quite feel right. It's got this gray, and the identity is just kind of white, green, and gray. And we kind of wanted to simplify that. It just didn't feel right. So I ended up with this, which is essentially what they ended up with in the end. And kind of stripped out everything and kind of just went for this clean, pleasing palette, with the photography now popping out a lot more because it's a little darker and the footer is there. So not a tremendous change in the sense of, you know, the details, but kind of the look and feel and overall tone of the site. And the last thing I wanted to kind of on the checklist is obsession is healthy. You know, we talk about obsession not being healthy, but I'm completely OCD when it comes to design. And, you know, I'll look at something for an hour or two. If, like, you know, my wife will come in and see me looking at the screen, and I'm looking at, you know, like a footer or something, and trying to figure out if that footer looks right. And then I'll, you know, zoom in and zoom out on the comp and make sure the masthead looks right with the footer. And, you know, it's that kind of, That's that kind of dedication to the design. You know, I mean, we as designers, we put in long hours. I mean, it's not really a 9-to-5 job per se, and I know everyone knows that. It's, you know, you work late hours to get the thing done. You got deadlines to meet. You work overtime, but at the same time, you kind of, I like to make time for focusing on little details, just so that it looks harmonious in the overall design. So. And finally, for that is thoughts, breakthroughs, and revelations. I kind of don't work. At least I don't feel I work in the same way that people at an agency work at. If I'm given kind of 10 days to do something with a deadline, I will kind of not physically do anything for like 7 days. It sounds slack, and it's like, you know, working under pressure or whatever, but I like to kind of just sit and think about the design. This whole this whole idea of design is in the details for me is about sitting and thinking about it. I think about it all the time, like every waking hour is about thinking about something I'm working on and being kind of obsessive about it or whatever. But, you know, I'll go to the store or I'll take a shower or something and I'm thinking about it and something will come to me. And it's like, oh, that's how, you know, that's what I needed to do. But, you know, I mean, it's not uncommon to go to a agency and get the creative brief and assignment and you're sitting there and you go to your desk and you start cracking on it. You know, you're like, okay, I'm going to start working on it in an hour. But for me, it's like, I'll take the 7 days to kind of think about what the client really wants or what the client really needs or what needs to be done. Kind of find a really good concept or a few and then start going through my steps, you know, start experimenting and then go, you know, start making choices and then staying consistent and so on and so forth. But this idea that you don't have to start on it right away. Because, you know, you get frustrated. You start working on something and you're not really thinking about it and you're like, you know, this doesn't look right for the client. This isn't quite what I think they should be. You know, you're kind of just thinking about, kind of what you think you need to do. You know, you're under pressure. You're like, oh, I got 10 days. Got to get it done. I have more sites to do. But, you know, I mean, and not everyone can afford the luxury of, you know, sitting down 7 days or whatever. And I'm certainly working on other things too. But I want to stress this idea of, you know, letting the design percolate in your mind a little bit. Giving some thought to it, you know, caring about it, you know, making sure it's the right solution for your client. You know, making sure that everyone in your team is kind of happy with it and that they're, you know, happy to show it to the client. And to that end, I stress that it's a good idea to kind of critically think about it. It's not billable time. Often it's time that you kind of sit on. I mean, I'll work a few hours into it if I have to, but I'm not a pencil and paper person. So I just kind of when it's kind of like I'm waiting for inspiration to strike. So when it strikes, I get it done, and I get it done quickly. So. I mean, it might not work for you, but it works for me. So, but it's another way to think about it. I mean, if you want to try a design next time and think about not quite starting it right away, you know, letting a couple of days pass, but, you know, continuously thinking about what you might want to do for it, then do it. You know, I think it's a nice way to kind of break up the thought process between, you know, wasting hours on working on something when you can kind of think about it more and get inspired and then start it. So. And to that end, that's design in the details. And questions and answers, I guess, so. Does anybody have a question? Sandy? Well, I mean, if I'm working on something, if I'm actually physically at the computer, then I will charge for the time. But a lot of it is kind of thinking about it. And if I am sitting down and not doing anything else, I mean, like if I'm really thinking about it, I'm not like reading a book or something, then I'll charge for that time too. But, you know, I'm not like, okay, I thought about it for 10 hours. It's not an arbitrary number. It's like, okay, I thought about it for half an hour. You know, seriously thought about it for half an hour. That's something I'll bill into my time. And, you know, I mean, there are times when I've worked with M. Stoner where they'll tell me, okay, this comp should only take 15 hours. Do not go beyond it. And if I feel that the design needs to go past 15 hours or I go past 15 hours, then I won't charge for it. It's if that's the budget, I mean, and when, I'm not talking like going 10 hours past 15. You know, I'm talking about an hour or two or something. And I just want to make sure it's the right work, you know, that it's the right solution. So does that kind of answer it? Okay. Any other questions? Mm-hmm. 50% of the time, since I'm working with studios, a lot of the studios do the legwork for me. So I'm coming in as either an art director or a designer. and I'll have creative briefs, and sometimes I'll sit in on calls. And sometimes, you know, you kind of have a history of who the client might be. If it's a client you completely don't know about, then for me, it's, which, you know, obviously with clients I've had, it's about getting to know them. With Humanized, it was a lot of sitting around and talking about stuff. And it wasn't about like, okay, this is the work that needs to be done. I kind of like to get to know my client. I mean, it's not often that they have the time to do that, but if you can, sit with them as much as possible and try to figure out who they are and try to figure out what they're trying to do. And, you know, you'll have your best recommendations and they have a certain goal in mind. And if it isn't quite the right, convergence of the two, then try to show them why you think this is, you know, kind of the right way to do things. Cause, you know, clients aren't always, web savvy. So, to me, it's just getting to know them basically as much as possible if I can. So, yeah.
I'm curious what kind of activities you do to gain inspiration. You mentioned reading books, what other resources?
I actually spend a lot of time on the bike when I'm not designing. I race on a cycling team, and the cycling world kind of has a lot of visual aspect to it. They push the boundaries in different ways. There's like different schools of thought, and for me, a lot of my inspiration comes from that, in terms of kind of trying to figure out either clarity of mind or if it's just kind of ideas and concepts. I mean, I try to draw on everything I'm interested in, whether it's books or if it's art or if it's streetwear. I mean, I kind of really follow a lot of that kind of hype beast and different streetwear kind of scenes. There's a lot of weird art going on in there with like, you know, like a friend of mine in San Francisco has a pair of $350 limited designer Japanese jeans that were made for cycling. So that's $350, but they're fixable for life. And they made all these details in it, so it's designed for cycling. And it's like, you know, like with the Rafa softshell that I showed earlier, it's like that kind of like, let's make it functional. It may cost more, but if the quality is there, you know, so it's kind of this idea of, getting inspired by other people who are doing things that are not just aesthetics. So there's quality and function and care in it. So that kind of answers it. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, how do I defend the details that I work on in my designs? Yeah, I with a lot of the university sites, especially, there's a lot of friction between the faculty and the staff. And I mean, like if it's a client that you meet one to one, it's a lot easier to kind of sit down and talk with them. But with a larger organization, there's a lot more people to convince. And in that respect, you know, either they trust you inherently or you have to fight them all the way. And for me, it's about kind of sitting down and saying, okay, well, if we do it this way, this is what'll happen. And this is why it'll be easier. I mean, it could be anything as, like, okay, this footer needs less things. A lot of universities are very fond of putting, a ton of stuff in their footers. Like, okay, this is the homepage for our university site. Even though, you know, this branch of the university is like 10 levels deep. They kind of want to put in like, okay, this is our arts and sciences school. This is our, you know, graduate school. But you kind of want to say, well, in within the context of this design, then this doesn't make sense. You know, why would you want to go here or there? So it's kind of like making sure you know why you're doing it. If you're completely sure and you have a completely rational argument for it, then it shouldn't be too hard to sway them. At least, you know, I mean, you don't want them to get hung up on something that's aesthetic per se, but you want them to kind of focus on why you're doing it. You know, ask a question like, you know, tell them like, this is the solution we're trying to solve. You know, not this is, I'm just putting it in there. You know why you're doing it. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, people work different ways. So it's definitely kind of a subjective thing in my case, because this is the way I work. But it's definitely something new to kind of, I mean, if you've never done something like that, I'd say try it once, even if it's a personal project, kind of set yourself a deadline and a goal and say, okay, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do, but just do it. You know, it's, I try to kind of, I mean, the 7 days, I'm not physically doing stuff. You know, it's, and I mean physically, but I'm not being in Photoshop, but I'm kind of just thinking about it and thinking about it. So, I mean, for me, it's kind of, you know, when you have the idea, you kind of just put it down to paper and it's done in like a day. So it's kind of that thing. But I mean, like for some people, it might be starting out with a framework. So you can go back to something like experiment and start experimenting with stuff and say you've kind of got those couple of concept stuff. And then you'd be like, okay, well, I'm going to take a couple of days off and then come back to it and see whether you still kind of like those ideas. So you can kind of jump around in kind of the timeline of things, and you can start out early and then come back 2 days later, look at it again, do a little bit more work, take another day off and come back to it and just kind of see how you like it with fresh eyes. So. Anybody else? Yeah. Yeah. that's obviously a huge problem. Depending on the client, if you can work in a photo shoot, or even if you're a semi-competent photographer, you'll probably take better photos than if they hired somebody else. So if you can work that in the budget, that's something to try. I've definitely done that before where I'll be like, okay, I'll take the photography for you. And I'll tack on this many hours or whatever that needs to be done. The content obviously is obviously one of those things where you have to push from the get-go. I don't know if anybody was at the Spect yesterday. That was kind of, Jeffrey Zaldman and Jason Santamaria and stuff, but they talked about, I think Aaron Kassane was talking about getting the content and pushing for that all the time. Cause I mean, like, you just tell them, like, it's not going to be done if I don't have this, you know, it's like, I'm not going to launch of this, or I mean, you can set deadlines. I mean, when you're doing the scope of the work that needs to be done, you need to say this is the hard deadline for you know source material that I need. I can't start working until I have you know this and this. So it's like by you not providing me stuff, this will just take longer. So anybody else? Okay, if not, thank you.